So tunes, I have. Would you say that these albums are in the same ballpark stylistically? Because you're more a rock guy than I am. Like,
the two new albums.
Yeah, the two new albums. They come from the same sort of place. Are they similar in some ways or not at all?
There's guitars.
Big crunchy guitars, like
no. In some cases there are. I would, yeah. Some you'd use some of the same words to describe them. Some of the same instruments are involved. Some of the same notes are involved.
I struggle with rock music because I sort of
because it's something you have no experience of.
Yeah, that's right. I like what I like, and yeah, when I try and break it down why I like something or why I don't like something, I really struggle explaining it to someone else.
It's the vibe. That's why we have a music review podcast, Bezo.
Which
because we're terrible at explaining why we like things.
Well, I don't know.
This is fucking great because it's fucking great. If you don't like it, you're in good.
I read an article this week about hip-hop being dead, and I read probably 10 articles last year about rock being dead, written by professional music reviewers that were absolute fucking tish.
Yes, so genre is dead just says, I have given up on genre because it no longer speaks to me because I'm too old. That's all that genre is dead means in any context that you see it in, folks. Pro tip. The two new albums we're listening to this week are... All Them Witches, who are a Nashville kind of psychedelic blues prog metal band of some descript. And I should probably check what the album title is because it's immediately broke out of the top
sleeping,
of my head.
Sleeping Through the War is the name.
Sleeping
of that
Through
one.
The War. I never actually looked at the album title, I have to admit. And the other new album we're listening to is a super group of sorts called Crystal Fairy, and their album is called Crystal Fairy. It has members of various bandes, including At the Drive-In and the Melvins and that sort of thing. The interesting thing is that it does not sound anything like the Melvins or At the Drive-In or anything. To be fair, which album should we talk about in the first instance, Mr. Beasley?
Well, let's start with Crystal Fairy because let's that was the one that I found boring as fuck.
So, why did you find it boring as fuck?
Well, this is what I'm struggling with because I actually think the vocal in that one is a little better.
How would you describe Crystal Fairy's sound?
Crunchy, like
crunchy
thrashy.
I would have said crunchy is like Spiderbait from 1996. This wasn't if you can imagine Kate Bush duetting with Black Sabbath. that's kind of a good place to start. I thought these guys would be more kind of art rock, disappear up your own ass, the Julie Ruin sort of stuff. It was much more metal than I thought it was going to be. It was
there were some thrashy big guitars, I guess.
And there were some preposterous flourishes. There was some real ridiculous solos, and they almost sound like a Swedish or Scandinavian. Sort of prog metal band because of her, because of the way that she sings. She actually sounds like they actually sounded. So there is some preposterous stuff in there. The back end's a bit more art, sort of proggy. I enjoyed the album. I didn't think it was that interesting. And I'm not sure how I can explain what that means, but they were being very weird, and that was clearly a plan, but I still enjoyed the content of it. See, now I'm as bad at describing how I feel about music.
When I was listening to it, I was like, I think the Doc will enjoy this a lot more than me because I can see elements of other music that you would enjoy. But
so you were thinking like the algorithm for Discover Weekly.
That's right.
Which is how we got here in the first place, I expect.
But I just, I don't know, it just bored the fuck out of me. Which I guess is a little bit...
Well, it's a reaction.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, art is meant to move you in some direction. That's a direction to be moved in.
I listened to it once the way through and went, it just feels like... It's a little bit like looking at a picture and going, they've just seen, like, which is probably like a lot of my graphic design, they've seen something else that's interesting and they've just copied it and tried to make it a little bit different. But, you know...
What is it that they're... Because that was one of the things I couldn't grasp is, who do they sound like?
Yeah,
and
well...
I've never really been able to pin down who it is that they sound like. That's why I sort of come up with this idea of, it's Kate Bush's vocals stuck to some incredibly bizarre prog metal band. The Mars Volta. I mean, there's overlap there with at the Drive-In Crew. Points for trying.
The beauty of being me is I don't have that historical background knowledge that you do to be able to relate it to particular types of music. So
the beauty of being me is my ignorance. That is beautiful.
Yeah, that's right.
That needs to go on a shirt. Get rid of the biz. I was wrong. Just get me one that says the beauty of being me is my ignorance, because that is basically what you've just said.
But it is.
I don't know much about art, but I know what I like.
Because I listen to it and I go, okay, well, I can obviously recognize bits of this music, like stylistic bits. But I can't tie down. But see, whereas that would nag at you and you would go, fuck, I need to relate that to an exact time frame, or like I need to try and figure out where they're coming from.
It only nagged me in terms of I didn't have words to describe it. And that's sort of, I mean, whenever you review an album, it's kind of, how do I feel about it, is point A. And then point A1 is, how do I describe how I feel about it? And that's often the trickier problem, isn't it? Which is exactly what we're talking about here, is I know how I feel about this album, I just don't know how to express that, which is why music reviewers have a job.
Yeah, I find it a lot easier. I find it a lot easier to talk about stuff that I like than stuff that I don't like.
I actually find it easier to talk about stuff that I don't like, because I can just come creative ways of hanging shit in it. And I like this album. I didn't love it. It won't feature in my... And as you said a couple of weeks ago, we yet to find that really great album that's going to be even a top five chance. I'm wondering whether something like Run the Jewels might appreciate it with time and come back and sort of reinforce itself. But this is sort of a three and a half star album. It's just a serviceable, it's interesting to me. This is good comment to me, as they say on the internet. But it's not something that I'd want to listen to a lot of times on repeat, and that's kind of the definition of why it's not going to be a great album and not going to return at the pointy end of the year.
Well, that jams nicely into All Them Witches, because I found this album fascinating. And I actually think that... This album will either go two ways. I am interested to see whether this album grows on me the more I listen to it, the more I dig into... Because it's got a little bit more space and... they mix it up. You know, it's not just all one tone. You know, it can go fast and they have little spacey bits and you know, they're trying to do quite a few different things in this album.
And they're trying to do... All of the things in this album.
All of the things.
They are trying to do so many things in this album.
But I actually think that this album will lend itself to repeat listenings. And I have a feeling this album will grow on me.
How many repeat listens have you racked up so far?
Three.
Yeah, my experience is that it's gotten worse every time I've listened to it. I really liked it the first time. Subsequently, I've gone, okay, the sound, I've got a note here that said the sound is more interesting than the songs.
Yeah.
In that I really like what they're trying to do, but I'm not sure the end, if you consider the end product of the songs themselves, is actually shining as strongly as it could. And the lyrics are walking a fine line between sort of being artistically obtuse and just being flat out fucking stupid.
His voice is a little bit Mark Knopfler. It's not the greatest voice in the world.
Well, I think he's clearly trying to be, you know, he's sort of art student smoking French cigarettes, sort of totally spaced out, dancing on the alabaster. That was one of the better songs on the album, actually, Alabaster. But if you actually pull apart the lyrics, you go, this is just a whole bunch of stoner bullshit. But it's not deep, it's just fucked. But, yeah. But you know, it's really tripped out psychedelic blues. That's really what it is, particularly Internet, which is the last song on the album, is just, if you just deconstruct it, it's a blues song. It's just a slowed down, it's just a slowed down 12-bar blues song.
Yep. Yeah, I quite like this, and it was one of the albums I listened to sort of late at night with the headphones on while I was down at Coffs. And I don't know.
Because we have had 2 weeks on these albums, which is more than we normally have. And I have to admit, I didn't do much with them on the first week.
No, I didn't either. But I like music that has space and change-ups. I don't like everything to be one-toned, which is going to absolutely be destroyed by the two albums I pick next.
And the classic, folks. And the classic.
I enjoyed this. I do agree with you.
I did not enjoy this. Yeah. I want to point out, I enjoyed this. Literally, I have, the first time I listened to it, I wrote, psych blues prog thing, approve. And subsequent time I wrote in principle next to it because I thought I liked the idea of the album and the sound of the album more than the actual songs on the album. Because I went back and went, what songs do I like on this album? And every one of them was flawed in some kind of way.
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of the point. You're not going to get a perfect 3.5-minute pop song out of a band that's doing this stuff.
Hmm. That gets back to this year, though, don't you feel? Like, we're in March, and I haven't really, like, you know, if someone hits me up on Twitter, oh, you guys review music, what can you recommend from this year? Like,
it's a bit thin. It's a bit thin. Although, your best album of the year last year was
Black Mountain.
Black Mountain, and that popped up. That was sort of June, July.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah, like, so, And the thing is that the two albums I'm going to pick next, I absolutely do not think will make the top five. I have reasons for picking them, but I don't think they're going to be brilliant, brilliant albums. I hope I'm wrong. I absolutely hope I'm wrong. But the funny thing is, doing this so much now, you get a feel for, like, I was talking to a person. So the J-Files Double J previewed and did a J-Files on one of these albums last night. And I was talking to someone about this album and how the single was a little bit disappointing. And I just talked about how the fact that fourth, fifth albums from bands, well-established bands, have not gone well in our estimation. Prodigy and Chemical Brothers are like the two outliers of how well late albums have gone for bands that are well established.
How many ideas do you still have once you're doing your fourth or fifth albums?
That's right.
It's a bit like our podcast. How many new ideas do you have when you're up to 200 episodes?
lots. We've got lots of.
We outsource the ideas to the people who give us the ideas, which is the albums we review. So we've had kind of the reverse views on Crystal Fairy and All Them Witches. I think we don't love either of the albums, but you like All Them Witches more than I do, and I like Crystal Fairy more than you. So that just goes to show that music is in the eye of the beholder, except when it's not, because it's in the ear of the beholder, and that doesn't work as a saying.
So what it?
So let's talk about Dakota ring is sort of something that goes around the piston of a DC-3.
So I've been trying to get you to listen to this album way before we did this podcast.
Which is a weird obsession on your behalf.
It is. And back then I really thought you'd like this album. Now I know you a little bit better.
The fucking nature of the beast.
I'm not so sure you would like this album, but I'm not 100% convinced that you wouldn't. So what did you think of it?
So you described this as the soundtrack for a movie that hasn't been made. The first thing I thought of when I was listening to this album is, what sort of movie is this? What sort of film are we making here? How do you picture the album? How do you picture the movie that this album fits to?
Yeah,
it kind of felt like establishing shot, or it felt like a road trip opener almost. But I was trying to, as I was listening to the album, I was trying to sort of figure out what the movie was that went with this song.
It'd be almost like an art house road movie where, yeah, it's
weird.
Shit
happens along the way.
Yeah, it's got real momentum. This whole album's got real momentum, and it's like one whole piece of music cut into bits rather than a more traditional album. But yeah, it's cinematic in its sort of style, but
scope.
It's a very strange. I actually saw this album perform live, and it was fucking amazing. They had all these weird visuals over the top of it. Obviously, with hardly any vocals over it, there's
How
no...
How fucked were you?
Pretty fucked, actually. Pretty fucked.
Exactly.
But it's interesting. I just find it...
Yes.
It's a really interesting album. It's not definitely not mainstream. I've listened to this album a lot. I don't get sick of it. I just find it compelling. Compelling's the word I find it. I find it really compelling. So what did you think of it?
So music without vocals in it is normally background music. It's normally considered incidental music. And, of course, music for a film is normally described as incidental music. Mm. And incidental music, the thing about incidental music is, by definition, it's incidental. It happens in the background. It's not in the foreground. I can never get comfortable with the idea that stuff that happens in the background, that music that is incidental, can be classic. Mm. For me, music has to be front of house. It has to be occupying all the space in the foreground of your sensory experience. It can't be something that sort of, I mean, music can be put on in the background and be perfectly serviceable and be there for a reason and be a soundtrack for a party or whatever. But if it's genuinely a classic album, I kind of feel that it has to be something that will dominate all of your sensory experience for while it's on. You can't really have it as background music. You can only put it on and experience it at the expense of everything else. Now, that's a philosophical thing. That's not a hard and fast rule, but that's kind of how I feel about. I enjoyed this album quite a lot, because it's incidental music, it's incidental to my experience.
The whole hundreds of years of classical music is screaming at you right now.
No, it's not, because that was, you literally went and had to sit in a fucking chamber, and all you could experience was the music.
Yeah, but see,
put on your CD and sit in your fucking study in sort of 1770. Mm. That wasn't happening a lot.
But that's the thing. I don't find that way. Like, if I put this album on, it is front of house to me. And the funny thing is, I can't listen to this album. I don't have a favorite track. this is one piece of music. I have to listen to it.
Neither do I, funnily enough.
I have to listen to the whole album. I find it, it doesn't work unless you listen to the whole album. The only the thing I didn't like about the YouTube, like that was the only place I could find it, but it puts those one or two second breaks in between each song.
Well, like when it's skipping from video to
yeah,
video.
Yeah, yeah, but
it's doing its best. Spotify does that too sometimes. Maybe they
It is an album, and when they played it live, they played it. That was their set. They played it from start to finish. They didn't mix the songs up or play four of the songs and not two.
Well, at that stage, they didn't have any other songs. I looked them up. They had an EP before that, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. This was the album that they sort of played, but. But even when they played the songs, like, you know, they didn't play a song, stop, and then play the next song. They played it as a sort of 35-minute set, and that was it.
50.
Still one of the best live music experiences I've had. Watching that set, it was fucking awesome.
Fucked off. Really, really good. You could have been watching The Wiggles, mate, and you would have had a good time.
No.
You would have been given it fucking mashed banana. Huge styles. You'd have been given it the woo, cold spaghetti. I can see the spaghetti, man. It's fucking awesome.
Actually, that would be fun. If I could go and drop a couple of E's and go and watch The Wiggles.
So The Wiggles have been doing gigs for adults, and I'm sure there are some people getting... Anthony Field wouldn't approve because he's a punishing opus type person. But I'm sure there's adults going there. Fucked off their nana, give it a chug a big red car. Fucking wee. In no state to drive either. So there is that. So, yeah, my only issue with the album was a philosophical question of whether soundtrack style music can ever be.
Look, okay, so later on they did a...
They did literally soundtracks.
Yeah, they did a set there, and that soundtrack album has vocals, but still has that same atmospheric soundtrack feel.
It's not necessarily the lack of vocals. It's the style of music. It's the fact that it is clearly designed to add atmospherics to another sensory experience.
Yeah, see,
a soundtrack is literally the purpose of a soundtrack album is to add to another sensory experience. It's to add to the movie. It's to support the movie.
Yeah.
What is the soundtrack like without the movie? You've got to imagine the movie, or you've got to draw up pictures to kind of suit. Which is kind of how we're coming back to the question of what's the movie that this supports. You know, what are the images that are trying to be drawn out by? You know, this is a 50. It's 50. I checked. It was 50 minutes. Believe me. I was waiting. I was trying to work out whether I could fit it in before I was going to do something. So I figured out how long the album was. But I was trying to work out what's this album trying to get me to think about. Where's the directions? Not just what images and what thoughts am I having? What reactions am I having to this album? What's the album trying to make me do? And are those two things matching up together? I think a bit too much about music sometimes.
Yeah, like,
but it would be a boring podcast if we just said, "Nah, shit house, fuck off, music for fucking poofdads," which would be,
well,
unpopular.
I hate to break it to you, but I'm gonna go down more the atmospheric path, because one of the new, or the first new album I'm gonna pick for next week is the side project of a couple of DJs. DJs, remix, trip hop artists, I don't know exactly what you called them, but Kruder and Dorfmeister have a side project called Tosca.
I thought they were a side project.
What, Kruder and Dorfmeister?
Yeah.
Well, I've never really worked out what the main project is, whether Tosca is the... Because
I know that that name is because they did a remix of Bug Powder Dust.
Yeah, which is our theme song, so...
It was.
Was our theme song. Occasionally gets thrown in again.
We never got a third season theme song because production staff are lazy.
Don't worry, I have a third product. I have a third season theme song all lined up, ready to go.
Technically, we have kind of a 2.5 season theme song with me ripping off the RPM theme music and sticking Barry Sheen on the
end. Yeah, that was
major songs. I dropped. Actually, there were quite a lot of drops in that episode.
Come on, the classic, the best one was the intermission between the main podcast and the After Dark.
Oh, James Hunt. It's like, frankly, Murray, that's bullshit.
The Late Show, Mr. Whippy Van Grand Prix.
Oh, the Mr. Whippy Grand Prix. Yes.
Oh, I was cracking up. That was hilarious.
I had to drop the Mr. Whippy Grand Prix.
So
what that shows, though, is that Rob Sitcher's impression of Murray Walker and James Hunt was shithouse compared to actual James Murray Walker and James Hunt, who, you know, was trying to cue it up so that the last thing I would say was sort of, and we'll see you next week. Frankly, Murray, that's bullshit. And I thought that would have worked quite well, particularly at the end when Jim Richards said, "We're as a bunch of Australian motorsport fans, we're all a pack of assholes." I thought that was quite appropriate as well.
I was a massive Kruger and Dorfmeister fan, and I bought a Tosker album on vinyl, which I really, really like.
You complete Tosker.
So this is like three albums later. So going on my late album theory on both the bands I'm picking this week, I don't expect this to be really good. Even really good Tosca, I don't know whether you will like, because it's very.
So this is moody. old bands. This is the latest efforts from old bands, because it's interesting, because the two bands that I picked last week were the week before last, were bands I'd never heard of before. So we'd gone completely novel. So you're going into you're mining the reunion space for this week.
Yeah, I had a couple of
you're telling me you're a Generation X person
at the moment
can't let go of the bands that were big when you were 20.
The funny thing is, I've got a whole heap of stuff queued up from my Discover Weekly and my release radar, but it's all singles. You know, the album hasn't dropped yet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, can you fucking drop the album? I've got like 15 fucking albums, that I'm really interested in, new stuff that I've never heard before, that I really like the single, and of course might actually be complete crap, because sometimes the single is the best thing about the whole album.
Try these two albums. This is exactly how we got these two albums. And yeah, the best songs on the album were probably the ones that were on Discover Weekly.
But occasionally you get a gem. But so that those speculative singles haven't come home to roost yet. So I'm going Tosca, going for my first album. And the second album is by The Shins. I really like The Shins. I like their side project between James Mercer. What's the Danger Mouse, I think, is the producer.
Danger Mouse is good at fucking up people's music. That's
He fucked up
the Black Keys.
I like their side project a lot more than The Shins. I did not like the single off this album, but
this all bodes terribly well.
I know it's not.
The ankle?
Broken Bells is the side. The Broken Bells. I'll get to that in the classics. That is a cracking album. The first Broken Bells album is a really good album. It's got some really positive reviews from like the Double J crowd, and I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. So
I understand your concerns there, because that can indicate music that's clearly just a direct aping of old stuff. I mean, Car Seat Headrest was very well thought of by the Double J crowd, because it sounded a lot like the dissolute grunge bands of the early 90s. Mm. It wasn't very good. It was actually a crap version of it, but it made them happy.
The way I describe the single, and like I try hard not to go and listen to these albums in full before we pick them, because I like to go into them fresh. But the single that I listened to, which came up on my Discover Weekly and like I jumped on because I liked the Shins, sounded like a fucking Shins cover band. And I was like, oh, no. And the person I talked to about it, talked it over with on Twitter said, I really wonder whether they've got a producer that's come in and gone, you've got this sound and I want to overlay my sound over the top of it because, yeah, which is never a good thing.
So this could be a painful week.
So save me, Doc. Save the week with your classic album.
Oh God, you don't know. You don't know what you've done to yourself, do you?
What have you got for me?
So we've talked previously about old bands who make, you know, who basically make late career comebacks. And I've often mentioned this album in terms of an example of a band who actually post the point where they'd quit and given up and pulled stumps and broken up, came back and released an unexpected fucking thunderbolt of an album. And the album in question is called Sexual Harassment and the band is called Turbo Negro. They are a bunch of Norwegians who kind of pioneered a sound that they call death punk, which is kind of a mashup of heavy metal, glam rock, punk rock, and just general snotty AC/DC style cock rock. And it is basically the inside of my brain. And I'd listened to Turbo Negro before with their existing, their old singer that they'd had for years, and they'd broken up, they'd split up acrimoniously, and the lead singer, because these guys were celebrities in Norway, and this guy ended up with his own talk show and had become a born-again Christian and a vegan and a whole bunch of things, and the rest of the band are like, well, I guess that's the end of that, and they thought about doing a tribute show, you know, just as a final thing, and they got in touch with the former head of their British fan club, who'd once sung in a band that had supported them on a UK tour, and they said, well, maybe Tony can come in and do a bit of can just do the vocals for this farewell tribute show just for their fans, because they've got massively passionate fans, just completely over the top. They all dress in fucking denim and wear ridiculous face paint, and it's preposterous, sort of cross between Kiss Army and just some kind of sexual perverts on tour shit going on. So they went and they tried this out in rehearsal, and they discovered, holy shit, this could work. And it just suddenly sparked off this amazing raft of creativity, and they ended up recording a new album and going on tour. And it was like a cross between a wonderful musical comeback story, but also like a boy's own adventure where you become the lead singer of the band that you were the fan club president of. And this guy isn't like a little kid. He's like this big fat Geordie with a massive gut and a beard. But he happens to have this voice that's just like leather and scotch and razor blades all thrown in a blender with rocks. And it's just he's got such an amazing voice. And that's actually why I enjoy this album more than a lot of Turbo Negro's back catalog, which is very good if you like that kind of sound. If you like cock rock, it's kind of like turbocharged cock rock. But this album came out in 2012, which makes it eligible for our eligible for classic because we're in the 5 years. It was just a perfect example of what you can do late in your career, Prodigy style. If you've got dedication, you've got focus, and you've got intent. And there's such a huge amount of intent in this album. It runs the gamut of from metal to ridiculous poodle rock, but it's what it is, I mean, it's completely inappropriate and sexual politics are questionable, but it's fun.
See, this is why I really tossed and turned about
Tosca.
Two new albums.
About the two new
albums I picked this week, because I was like, it's fucking old. It's old bands. And I was like, but half of this is trying to find really cool new stuff like Honeyblood. And then the other half is giving old bands a chance to do a Prodigy or a Chemical Brothers. Like,
yeah,
give them the chance. Look, if this is shit, both of us will rag the crap out of it.
Yeah.
But
if this is the Red Hot Chili Peppers album from last year.
Yeah. Or Faith No More, which, like, I'm a massive Faith No More fan, and that was a shithouse.
It was.
Album.
I keep thinking I should go back and give it another chance, but I think it's just was genuinely bad. Well, that Metallica album, which was just an example of people just never saying no. Nobody got no said to them at any stage, and that's why it just had too much of everything and not enough of anything.
I listened to a pop culture podcast, and a guy who...
You're too old to listen to pop culture podcasts. They should take those off people of your age.
A guy who was an editor...
Were you born in the 70s? No more pop culture for you.
A major magazine in the States, and they were talking about Harry Potter, and he's like, oh, look...
What's a magazine, Granddad?
Rowling got knocked back by, you know, quite a few publishing houses before she got a gig. And then she got massively popular. So you combine that with the fact that she was selling shitloads of books. And basically, by the fourth book, no editor could tell her anything. She could do whatever the fuck she wanted.
He certainly couldn't tell her to stop ripping off Tolkien.
And... like, I think it's the fourth or the fifth. One of the books in that series is just like, seriously, someone needed to fucking slap you around the face and say, no, you cannot write this storyline.
Is it like the sixth or the last one that is actually two books? Or something was two movies?
The last one's actually, like, it's sort of, it's like a lump. The first ones are really good because she's got a really clear vision. And then by the end, she sort of pulls it together. But the middle ones are just like these bloated... Like, there's good books in them. Don't get me wrong. There's good books in them. But she needed someone to say to her, you can't do X. You can't do this. You can't do this. You can't do this. These things you can do. These are really good. And
these are the things you're good at. I mean, they're just the same as somebody should have told Metallica that Load and Reload was one album. Yeah.
That's like you've got like 9 good songs in this 24 song album,
and they're all twice as long as they need to be.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
well, that's certainly not something you can say about sexual harassment, because it doesn't linger for a second longer than it needs to. It just gets in and tells you a lot of stories about filth and depravity, and then just gets the fuck out again with a song about intestinal parasites.
Well, that was cool.
That was a podcast. This was the Bald Guys After Dark. Our cold opens are getting so cold they are subantarctic. Our cold opens are so cold they're melting. They're going to be responsible for sea level rise. If you enjoyed the Balls Podcast After Dark, which was a discussion about music from two people who know nothing about it, please like and subscribe us on the internet in various places where you can listen to our podcast. We're on iTunes. We're on Omni. We've got an RSS feed. We have our own blog, which is at lantanaland.com. And we shout a lot on the Twitters, as you probably know, because if it wasn't for Twitter, you probably wouldn't have found us.
Because we have sort of abandoned our old feed, if you could do us a favor, like us on iTunes, share us on Facebook.
We haven't abandoned our own feed. It just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's right. As someone pointed out, is your old RSS feed really broken? And we're like, which one are you on? The old one or the new one?
And he went, that was ace, wasn't it? Well, that's the thing. I actually went back and checked it and found that ever since we started titling the episodes with things like, you should change your RSS feed to the new one. It stopped turning up. So I think it's preempted it. But we've got a new RSS feed, which means that we can be on iTunes again and taking advantage of Omni, who are bloody tremendous. They've got a lovely interface, and
way easier to use.
You don't need iTunes or any of that kind of gunk to listen to the podcast. You just open the website and press play. Simple as buggery and twice as attractive. iTunes, because most internet people are on the iTunes as well. Which means the show notes have to have no swears in them, unlike the fucking podcast.
So disappointing.
So fucking Nimrod. You can't even have... In fact, you know what I think it's caused the problem is that we probably use the word iTunes in the show notes to say, you should look find our new iTunes feed.
And the ban hammers come down.
Yeah, fuck them. Bunch of dickwads.
All right, Doc. I will catch you on the flip side.
I will be listening to music that is definitely not incidental.
See ya.
Cheers.
Oh, that was two good pods.
Yeah.
I do not think you're going to like these two new albums, but I can't.
That's the thing. I didn't. You know. I think I'm more disappointed when I pick albums that I don't like because they had the prospect of being good. With your albums, it's all potential upside.
Yeah.
I've heard something about them before, like the King Gizzard album you picked the other week. Mm. It's all potential upside because I've got no expectation.
The thing is, I don't think I'm going to like either of these albums, but I might. Who knows? Like, singles have been bad indications of what an album's like before. Let's see.
Yeah. Not even singles, just the album, the songs that get picked up by
Discover Weekly. I'm not sure
how they do that. I think it's probably on the basis of what's the most played song of the new release, which might just be a function of which is the single, because that's the one that people will go to. There was a really interesting piece in, I think I linked you to it, or at least I tagged you when I tweeted it from the podcast account, getting into the thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago, which is how the fuck the algorithm works. And apparently they're quite keen to tell people about it. And how it works is it's basically a lot of modeling off the way other people do their, what they've done is looked at a lot about how people who build playlists, what associations they draw, and trying to model those associations for a different set of music. Like, okay, if you've added this song to your, this band to your playlist, you know, looking at all the other set, the huge data set of all the other playlists, people who've added this band have also added this band. So therefore there's a relationship there that might not necessarily be obvious. And that's kind of how they get those similar to relationships, which I think underpin a lot of the Spotify algorithms.
So one of the things
is
I did
was... Is this the after
was,
dark or the after after?
Yeah,
after,
this is the after after dark.
But it's the after before the after bit, before the bit that at the front of the before the dark that's after the other bit.
But just quickly, so I took some of the younger guys in the team to the fields every day. And I was like, okay.
Do we have to redact this as well?
No. I was like, what do you guys listen to? Like, you know, what's the
new sound on the streets?
Yeah, well, but I also asked them, I said, like, when you were in high school, because they're only 1 year removed from high school, I was like, did everyone listen to Kanye or something like that? And they're like, no, like, you know. Our group listened to these three artists. This group listened to these three artists. And there was no crossover at all. Like, almost like your social groups was defined by the type of music that you listened to.
That's stratified on that basis.
They did make me join Snapchat, which is pretty interesting.
How many times have you got your cock out?
None yet.
I know it's not a wedding, but...
I made them listen to Honeyblood.
I'm glad you didn't make them listen to Black Mountain because that would have scared them.
No, I thought Honeyblood was a better one.
So what sort of stuff were they listening to in their little gangs that only listened to three bands?
Just hang on, I've got to grab my phone because Spotify on the desktop doesn't save it.
Because we're interested. Let's find out what the youth of today are listening to. Disappointingly, I'd have no more beer.
So there was one particular one.
What genre are we playing in here? Is it R&B hip-hop or are we talking
about? Yeah, like hip-hop. J. Cole was the one that they were big on. I listened to that album. That wasn't a bad album. I would have quite happily picked that as a new album last year. Like the lyrics are very heavy, nigger and bitches, which I think I listened to a little bit more to the lyrics. Have it like through the exposure to you, like that jumps out at me a lot more quicker than it used to. But the beats weren't.
But again, that's a philosophy thing. That's my philosophy coming through. Like the point of hip hop is the lyrics. That's what leads the show. Whereas I think for you, hip hop is led from the beat. It's led
from the that's right. And the beats were actually quite interesting.
Which isn't incorrect. It's just alternative to my philosophy.
But Bruno Mars, I'm like, this is shit. This is just a fucking terrible album. Can we please listen to something else? Really? And they're like, okay, well, what about J. Cole?
What about Mark Ronson with guest starring Bruno Mars?
The thing is that in
our day, any 18-year-old male listening to something as quote unquote soft as Bruno Mars would have been bullied to the point of resigning tenure as a member of the gender. It's good that isn't a thing anymore, that you don't get bashed for not listening to Guns N' Roses.
You listen to whatever the fuck you want.
But you should get bashed for listening to Bruno Mars. That's fucked shit.
So the first J. Cole album song they play me is a song called Wet Dreams, which
that's
is essentially...
J. Cole, not Jake Hole, in case you're wondering, and he's no relation to Jay Giles.
Which is essentially about having wet dreams as a 16-year-old.
Great.
And I just found it really...
Relatable content.
Well, for them, it totally is. You know?
So you reckon J. Cole's pitching his entire gig at teenagers, or...?
Yeah, for sure. I think at that 17, 18, 19...
He's like the Wiggles
19 young male demographic.
The Wiggles for the Wank Sock Brigade.
For sure. But the music...
That was a better line than you gave it credit for.
The
Wiggles of the Wank Sock Brigade.
So if Honey Blood was the first album that I made them listen to, what do you reckon the second one was?
That's not an album I would have rolled with that, because it's... Yeah, I don't know whether that would have been the one I would have rolled with. The second album... You should have inflicted the entire 3.5 hours of that Metallica album on them.
Just to punish them
for being young.
If I wanted to really fucking weird them out, what album would have I sent them?
A photo album of your dick from those weddings you've been to.
Quite close. Lavage, music to make love to your old lady.
Oh, boy. Fucking hell. See, at least you could have got the psychedelic porn crumpets out.
I was like... Because I was thinking, well, they're obviously interested
in it. Are you there to train them or give them sex education? I mean, is this on the side? You going to play them a bit of Pornland and a bit of Electric Six?
Oh, Pornland. Oh, fuck. That's the next one I'm going to Snapchat them.
You
got to
listen
to Pornland.
You would have been arrested on child sex offences for that.
Oh, that would be hilarious. I've got to do that next. Oh, that is so funny.
I believe the children are our future.
That's right.
Fucking hell.
Until I get my hooks in them. Oh, anyway, God. Doc. All right, I'm going to edit this and throw this up. Yeah. I might even I have been recording this after dark. After dark,
yeah, I haven't stopped recording because this was worth keeping.
Yes, this is good content.
I'm going to go out and live and say this is #good#content. This is good, comma to me.
All right, catch you later.
Internet.
See ya.